We have 11 planes ahead of us, so it will be 15 minutes before departure. Even though she could not see the line of planes, just knowing we had to wait led Kim to a complete meltdown. I started to say, "Kim, if you don't stop, we aren't going to Disney." But that was one of my reasons for taking her on this trip, so I swallowed my threat. Helpless and embarrassed, I said to myself, "This was a mistake. I will never do this again." The next day, Saturday, as I reflected on my reaction, I realized I'd forgotten the J-curve, the idea frequently articulated by the Apostle Paul that the normal Christian life repeatedly reenacts the dying and rising of Jesus. I call it the J-curve because, like the letter J, Jesus' life first went down into death, then up into resurrection. Just like the earthly life of Jesus, the J ends higher than it starts. It's the pattern not only of Jesus' life, but of our lives, of our everyday moments. When Kim and I were sitting in the back of the plane, I thought everything had gone wrong. No, the Apostle Paul says, the J curve is the shape of the normal Christian life. Our lives mirror Jesus's. Keep in mind that Jesus's J curve atones for our sins. Ours don't. His is once for all. We have multiple J curves that echo his. For the sake of clarity, when I use the term J-curve by itself, I'm referring to our present J-curves. As we shall see, our J-curves each have their own unique cadences, but they all enter some kind of suffering in which evil is weakened or killed, weaken the flesh and form us into the image of Jesus, and lead to a real-time, present resurrection. Dying and rising on the way to Florida. As I reflected on how our travel disaster was the beginning of a J-curve, our trip went from a lifeless gray to vibrant and multicolored. Like Jesus, I experienced a death followed by a resurrection. The two are inextricably intertwined. Friday's trip left me drained and weary, dying, which created a spirit of humility as I taught on Saturday, rising. On Saturday, I was in front of a group of people who were listening to my every word. I'm thankful they were such eager listeners, but being at the center of people's praise is potentially toxic. I'm prone to leadership sins of over-talking and under-listening, so Friday's dying was God's gift to inoculate me against the pride lurking behind success and popularity. The work of love that happens in a J-curve exposes our hearts in unexpected ways. On Friday, in front of three different crowds, at the bus shelter, in the security line, and on the plane, I was far too concerned with how I looked. In fact, my desire to hide my "See Jesus" box at the bus shelter showed I was ashamed of him. The sign was dead on. See Jesus in his humility. Don't run from his path of weakness. In fact, that's the message of this book. Resurrection has multiple faces. After that Florida trip, I told Kim I'd give her $50 for letting me interview her at a Young Life banquet in Washington, D.C. As I interviewed her about our Florida trip, she giggled, smacking her head at all the funny parts of the story. It was a delight to watch her. After the interview, I stepped aside so she could take her speech computer off the podium and sit down, but she didn't budge. Instead, with 250 people listening, she typed out on her speech computer, "Money." In other words, "Dad, show me the money." How's that for a resurrection? The right time to rediscover the J-curve. The collapse Kim and I went through on our Florida trip is a microcosm of the cultural collapse Western civilization is going through. The rising tide of unbelief and the lure of secular liberalism touch almost every Christian home. 50 years ago, we called the occasional child who walked away from the faith a black sheep. Now almost every Christian home has children walking away from the faith. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. A young wife, Sarah, from a healthy church confided to a friend of mine, "I think I've outgrown my marriage." That's something you might say about an immature boyfriend, but Sarah said she had outgrown her sacred vows to her husband. She used therapeutic language to mask her betrayal. Sarah's feelings operated at the center of her decision-making. Almost certainly, Sarah encountered some immaturity in her husband, instinctively discarded the biblical morality she grew up with, "Be faithful in marriage," and reached for the central moral